a pre-recorded version of the WTK Roundtable on WTK, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. This is recorded, though, so if you call in, nobody will answer you.
Fixed just in time for the fellows to be here slash be on the phone. Craig Ross is in Hawaii. Brian Cook is here. Ed Fang is here as well. Good morning, fellas. How are you?
Morning. Good.
I'm doing good.
Actually, the grunt's a little more than I expected, Brian.
That's pretty good for
you,
Brian.
You think I was just going to be silent here the whole time?
But I wasn't sure. I really wasn't sure after reading your... it's not really a postmortem that you wrote of the game. It was more of a brief. You wrote a brief after the game, which is fine. I understand where you came from. There's a lot of frustration out there. I get that.
Can't take the takes.
What's going on, man?
How's it in Hawaii, Craig?
It's good here. I read Brian's article to my wife, and she said, "Man, what's going on with Brian? You better call him." And I said, "No, he's okay."
Thanks, Craig. Your concern for my mental health is noted and not appreciated.
Okay.
So I'll just kind of open it up, and I'll let you start with it. Your postmortem on the bowl game and the 2017 Michigan football season.
Well, obviously the season was disappointing. Maybe the most disappointing thing to me on the season was that we started with a quarterback, Wilton Spade, who we thought was probably going to be pretty good, and she went in retrograde. And then John O'Korn showed up and played pretty well in Purdue, and then he went in retrograde. And then we brought in Peters, who we were optimistic about, and he sort of declined too, although I haven't watched the South Carolina tape yet, which incidentally is the worst filming I've seen since Gene Hickerson going against Big Daddy Lipscomb in 1959, because you can't, there's no actual part of the field you can see in this, in the ESPN tape. But, you know, I'm not sure I'm going to come away thinking that Peters was as bad as I originally thought. I mean, in the first series, Higdon blows a pass pro, and the second series, he hits Crawford on the shoulder pads and the ball isn't caught. Third series, he does make a nice play out to Peoples Jones. So, I mean, it may not be quite as bad as I thought, but it felt like to me that the quarterback play over the course of the season got worse, or they all got worse. Am I being just too cranky, or does that feel right to me?
No, I mean,
it's a cranky week. You're allowed to be cranky.
I mean, we recorded our podcast yesterday, and that was pretty much the first thing out of my mouth about the season is like all three quarterbacks went backwards, and that's unprecedented under Jim Harbaugh. I mean, he had one kind of crappy year, his first year at Stanford, when he had like a pottery major walk on in his quarterback. But every other year in his career, he's done very well with his quarterbacks, and they've improved a lot over the course of the year.
And that started at San Diego with Johnson and a couple other guys. That's true.
Yeah, he really has.
Johnson
was a third-round pick, and he was at a non-scholarship 1AA school. So, you know, and from there, he gets Andrew Luck, and then he gets the NFL, and Alex Smith improves a lot, and Colin Kaepernick improves a lot, and you know, he gets to Michigan, and Jake Rudock becomes a draft pick, and then Wilton Spate looked like he was on that path
last year,
and then he doesn't look very good this year. And I don't think it's just the pass protection. I don't think it's just the wide receivers. But right now it is an outlier, and hopefully it remains an outlier.
Yeah, I mean, Spate and O'Korn definitely were not good. I mean, Peters had a bad game in this game. I'm definitely not ready to write him off and say he's in retrograde. I think he had a bad game. The turnovers obviously hurt, but... yeah, I mean, I think the offense in general was very disappointing in this game. 3.5 yards per play. Wasn't getting the type of push in the run game either. We had seen some better run blocking through the middle part of the season, and that just didn't come back.
Obvious reason for that. I mean, you're down three of your starters.
Well, you go into the game, and I don't think people were expecting to not have Bredesen, and I don't think people were expecting to not have Kugler. It's not that Kugler had a great season, but he still was your starting center.
Yeah.
And you're also without Bushel Beatty as well, so you are down three on an offensive line that wasn't that good to begin with. So,
well, but an offensive line that did have a couple of good games in the middle of the season with their run blocking
against teams that don't have front.
No,
I mean they did it against the poorer teams, but still, I mean I get your point, but there was definitely the regression in this game. I looked at the game when it was over, and my first reaction at halftime was that I was watching the Michigan offense in the first half of the bowl game was the Ravens' bad offense that played like 80% of the season this year. A struggling offensive line, a quarterback that lacks confidence, and a very erratic running game, and it leads to field goals. I mean, that's what the Ravens' offense was, and that's what the Michigan looked like in the first half. I thought, and you guys probably did as well, that first drive of the second half, first defensively they made a nice stop, and then they get out there and they score, and you're like, okay, maybe the first half was, you know, was Peters rusty. He had missed the last, you know, game and a half of the season plus the time off, and he was just getting his – but then obviously it fell off a cliff after that, so that wasn't actually the case.
I mean, that's not what you want to see from a quarterback that's going to get some competition for the job next year, right? I mean, you wanted to see him come out and put a stamp on this job, have a good game. I mean, like I said, it's not like I'm writing this guy off at all, but –
was not a good audition.
He did not have a good game. I mean, there's no other way to put it.
No, and I looked at the game itself, though, as a – I mean, it's kind of a microcosm of the season, right? The way this season played out and the way that game kind of played out, that there were a lot – all the things that happened during the year once, twice, or a lot seemed to come back in this game once, twice, or a lot.
Right, but when our defense got scorched during the year, at least it was with some decent offenses. This was not a decent offense.
They barely got 300 yards, and they had 5 turnovers. I don't think they got scorched.
Well, they didn't get scorched, but I mean, you would.
Cannell had one bad play where they got beat for a touchdown, but other than that, it's like, okay, holding them a field goal because they turned the ball over in the red zone, so okay, that's fine.
Yeah, the defense wasn't
happy
its
with
best.
The defensive performance? I don't know if I was happy with the defense.
I wouldn't look at that game. I did not walk away from the game on Monday and say that the defense played great, but yeah. I also don't walk away from that game saying, oh, the reason that they're anywhere close to the reason they lost the game was the defense.
Right. Yeah, I agree with that.
And the defense was fine. It wasn't great in the game, but it was...
I don't know how much more you expect from a defense that gets put behind the eight ball repeatedly. Like, the number of actual points that defense gave up was probably around 14. And then the rest of Michigan's team gave
one big play in the first half was led to a field goal.
Yeah.
And then the one play in the second half was a touchdown. There's probably one or two other in there.
Yeah,
but it's
got a little bit in there.
We'll have conversations about the defense over the next now. I think it's like 239 days until the season starts. But I don't think people's concerns really about this team. Well, I do have one of our emailers, Jim. He thinks Don Brown should just leave, and Don Brown's terrible. And I told him he is not alone on his island, but it's a very lowly populated island. The conversations going to next year are going to be almost completely about offensive coaching staff, quarterback play, offensive line play, development of receivers. And eventually we'll get the conversations about, you know, replacing certain guys on defense. But I don't think defensive conversations are going to be very at the top of the list at all over the next many months.
No, I mean,
the look on Brian's face when I told him about that email, it was really funny.
That's insane.
He looks at me like that sometimes too, Ira.
That's because sometimes you say things that are completely insane.
I'm just saying. I mean, not that I was.
Yes,
say.
That's what you're doing. You're just saying things that are completely insane on a regular basis. And I listen to them. And that's
and
why
you
I
respond,
like
And
that.
Then you respond to them.
No, that's just why I look like that. I'm like, oh, man, he's saying the crazy things again.
And it's probably why we don't spend a lot of time talking defense on the show is, for the most part, I mean, they're outlier game like a Penn State game, and they got you. But most of the time you get hit a few times in a game. Otherwise, the defense does its job.
Well, I mean, this game number 10 in S&P Plus as a defense, and I don't think they're going to move very much after that. And, like, they lost 10 starters, nine starters. I mean, let's count Mo Hurst. I mean, come on, but – and they're going to bring back 9 starters. And they were very young this year. You get a lot of true sophomore to junior transitions with guys who have a lot more upside, like Gary and Bush and Hudson. So, yeah, this defense should be top 5 next year. And I expect them to keep doing what they've been doing. Hopefully the offense can
– I was trying to explain to Jim that it's not always about – just looking at the season itself, it's not always with the defense about, oh, well, they gave up this and that. Well, if they gave up, say, 25 points to a team, well, if that team averages 50 points a game, right. You know, if they gave up 300 yards in offense to a team that averages 550 yards offense in a game, then the defense, while the number itself may look fairly larger, yeah, or whatever, it's if you're holding a team to half of their production
Do
scoring
you think
wise or whatever.
Jim is arguing in good faith and is persuadable. I feel like neither of those things is probably.
No, he said he was standing on that he was fairly alone on the island when I emailed him back, okay, or when I talked about it on the air. So he understands that he's in a minority, and that's why the conversations will continue to cycle back to the offensive side of the ball, because that's where all the questions are going into next year, I think, for everybody.
You said people are allowed to be grumpy this week, Ira.
Oh, it's a super grumpy week, and I get it. You know, and whatever the adjective is that you want, people are frustrated, they're disappointed, they're angry. There's a lot of adjectives you can use. I try to be a little more level-headed, so the anger part I try to leave out of it. But there's a lot of frustration. When I read your couple of paragraphs that you wrote after the game, you could see the disappointment. You could feel the frustration. I think that's how most people are. It's then how you manifest it as a fan. But for the most part, I think we've moved beyond fan reaction and how fans are acting, and we've now gotten to the part of, all right, well, what's next, and how does the team get better? And while there are distinct minority people like the emailer about the defense, or there's a distinct minority of people that are dropping F-bombs and fire hardballs all over the place, that's a minority. I think that the majority of people want change, but not dramatic change. They want coaching staff changes on the offensive side. They want some, you know, formational and strategical changes on the offensive side. They want better quarterback play, better offensive line play. But I think all that's pretty fair. Yep. What do you think, Craig?
Well, I mean, I have a couple of thoughts on the conversation. One is that, if you look at it logically, the defense should be phenomenal next year. On the other hand, I think Mo Hurst might be the best defensive lineman that Michigan's had in my lifetime. And he has been such a force this year. And if you watch the Carolina game, he was incredibly disruptive of their offense. And I don't think that's a player you ever replace, and it's hard to evaluate it. I'm just reminded a bit of the year post Woodson, and in particular where we had like nine returning starters, and we thought the Michigan defense was going to be great. And when they came out without Woodson, they lost Glenn Steele too. They just weren't, in that league anymore. And I wonder how much one guy like Hurst can impact the entire defense. But I mean, logically, you look at it, they've got guys there, like Dwumfor and perhaps Solomon and other guys in the defensive line. Look like they should be pretty good. I know they like Will Marshall, and they feel like he's coming along. And but I still worry. I still worry about the impact of a guy who's so disruptive. And losing him.
Yeah, I agree with you, Craig. I mean, I hope it's not an issue next year. He's in the later first round in some of these draft boards. Is that just a size thing? I mean,
that's crazy.
I don't know, but if he's on the board in the late part of the first round and my team's drafting, I want him. I don't care if my team has defensive tackles or not. I want him.
What, is he listed like 275? Is that
like,
I mean, 280, is that
280, 285?
280 is that just small for an NFL?
Aaron Donald's that size. Yeah. Size should not matter if you get the job done.
Sure.
And so.
Well, and you have the quickness. Like
yeah,
that,
and you
right?
have the quickness. I mean, and man, he had some moves in the game the other day that were just. I mean, his ability to get into the backfield without getting touched by a lineman that's like nose to nose with him is pretty impressive at times. I mean, it's not always going to happen, but it's pretty impressive that he can just shuffle around a guy and just make plays.
And then there was that play where South Carolina just decided not to block him. Like, best player on the defense. Oh, okay, here you go.
That's
when
strategy.
I was so excited about the game.
That's good strategy. Don't block him. I mean, it was a repaying the favor because Michigan didn't block their best defensive player in the last time these teams played. And it seems to be like the greatest play in the history of college football, which was really just a missed blocking assignment. But right. That's in the past. So I don't think it's much about the defense. We'll get into the offense on the other side of the break. Do you have any other comments on the defense since we bringing up at the moment? Do you guys have anything else on that side of the ball?
I'd rather talk about basketball on the other side of the break.
I think we came into the season. I came into the season with a lot of concerns about the secondary, and I think they performed really well, and that's great optimism for the future.
Yeah, I have a lot of optimism that they're going to plug and go. And I understand, Craig, that you're concerned about losing Mo because he is a really special talent. But sometimes when you lose a special talent in one spot, other talents then emerge. And you have with Chase and Gary on the outside, and with Devin Bush and Khalik Hudson in the middle. And then the secondary that Ed just talked about, whoever comes in, whether Aubrey or Dwumfor, whoever, I think they're going to be fine that they're going to be fine up the middle and on the defensive side. They just seem to churn guys out. Greg Madison's a heck of a defensive line coach. 734-998-1050. The phone lines are actually working. Let's go to Don in Ann Arbor. Good morning, Don.
Good morning, gentlemen. Before I have two questions, but I'm so old that I know who Eugene Big Daddy Lipscomb is, and this is the 25th January since 1970 that I have been in the aftermath of a Michigan bowl game loss. So that's a lot of fun. Two questions. A, if Greg Roman does come here and institutes the pistol, as some people are wondering about, is that going to require any substantial change in the way our offensive players have to approach things, especially the quarterback, or is the transition not that big? And B, am I the only one who thinks that Harbaugh's sideline demeanor this year seemed very strangely detached and unemotional, even when his own players are committing egregious failures in performance or judgment? Does it matter one way or the other anyhow? Thanks.
All right, we will get to those on the other side of the break. Don, appreciate the call at 734-998-1050. Brian is here. Ed is here. Craig is on the phone. We will talk about Greg Roman. We'll talk about Jim Harbaugh's sideline demeanor. We'll get to more phone calls and more on this side of the break here on Sports Talk 1050 WTK The Ticket. Welcome back inside the MDN studio, Sports Talk 1050 WTK The Ticket, online at WTK.com. For all your Michigan apparel and merchandise needs, make sure to visit our friends at the MDN. That's where you can get all the latest Jordan gear for basketball season. Michigan's got games coming up at the Chrysler Center Saturday. The men's team plays Illinois. Sunday, the women's team plays Ohio State. So big games, and the best way to dress for those games is to be in your amazing blue Jumpman gear, and you can get that at the MDN and the Victors Collection, the official outfitters of Sports Talk 1050 WTK The Ticket. I have Brian Cook in the studio. Ed Feng is in the studio. Craig Ross is in the phone, or is on the phones. I don't think he's in the phones.
Are you in the phone, Craig?
Yeah, if he was in the phone, maybe that's why it was broken. He's on the phones.
It might be better.
And Cameron 8 tweeted at us. I will not reread your tweet. I laughed. We laughed in the studio, but this is a family show, so we will not retweet or repeat what you said. But if you are now listening, we want you to know that you made me laugh.
You have been heard. We have
laughed. Michigan Insider's Twitter feed.
If you want to see it, Cam_Ron8, and you can see what he just tweeted about 2 minutes ago, and it's funny. And but we will not repeat that here. So let's go back to. We'll start with Craig's questions. Don's questions when he called in. And the first one was about the pistol offense and Greg Roman. It's not that they would even be exclusively pistol anyway. I like the pistol because it allows you to keep downhill running along with some of those spread/running quarterback options. It worked in San Francisco for him. It worked in Buffalo when he was the 1 year he was there. They led the league in rushing. So I don't think that's a major concern or would be not a major change. And they ran a couple of pistol formations this year.
I mean, the blocking is the same. It's just in the center. Make a pistol snap. That's pretty much it.
Right, which is about, three quarters of a shotgun snap?
I mean, there's timing with the quarterback and the running backs, but that shouldn't be anything that you can't figure out over, 30 practices until season starts? So
239 days.
Has Greg Roman been hired?
No, it's just one of the rumors. No, he has not been hired.
One of the rumors.
But it's just one of the rumors. That was where the question came from about the pistol offense. And they had success with it with Kaepernick as a running quarterback. And, I mean, they had a running quarterback and they had Frank Gore. I mean, they had talent and they had a really good offensive line. So, I mean, you need those parts in place no matter what kind of offense you're running. You want to have a good quarterback and you want to have an elite running back and you want to have a really solid offensive line. So I think it matters what the style is.
I mean, wasn't the pistol originally created to facilitate read options and at the same time have the upside in the passing game of shotgun formations? I mean, I thought that was the original creation, and I don't think we're going to go to read options. I mean, that one doesn't seem likely.
I mean, Chris Ault wanted to have more downhill running options.
Nevada, right? Yeah.
Yeah. He wanted to run the ball between the tackles more, and that's why he developed that. I'm not exactly sure why you have more inside running plays with that, but yeah, I mean,
well, because if the running back is now behind you, he can cut straight up to get the handoff, and he gets a couple steps before he gets the handoff, so he's upfield. If your running back's a sidecar next to you, he's got to get the ball from you, and then he's got to start running after he gets it.
You can attack it a second quicker.
So because it's like running out. It's an I formation run. Just the snap is in a different place. That's how you get the downhill, to the between the tackles out of the pistol. I understand the concept behind it. I understand the reason for it. And I actually like it a lot. I think that there should be more and more out of the pistol and less under center just in general, because I think it opens up more things for your offense if you have a quarterback that has some movement with his feet. And I do think they'll go to more read option if Shea Patterson is the quarterback. And I think, and you saw it with Andrew Luck,
And you saw it with in San Francisco. So it's a part of what they've done in the past if you have the right parts to do it. Right, Brian?
Sure. Sideline demeanor.
The other question about sideline demeanor. Ah, man, I've gotten this question so many times. And to me, it is 100% a result of the Harbaugh rule that was put in place. He got a penalty at the Ohio State game down in Columbus last year. That was not a penalty, but they called one. Then they created the rule, so if you grandfathered it in, I guess it would have been a penalty in the game last year, but it wasn't. And actually, ironically, the first person to get penalized for the Jim Harbaugh rule for sideline demeanor was Willie Taggart at Oregon. And Jim didn't get a penalty this year to cost his team 15 yards, and he wanted to make sure to not cost his team 15 yards. Do you guys think it has any impact on the team, way he – if he's, a little bit more calm, on the sideline? I don't think it has any impact. It's not like he's just sitting there clapping hands. He's not just sitting there doing that.
Grasping at straws, man.
That's what happens when you go 8-5 and lose your bowl game. 734-998-1050. You can email studio@wtk.com. Tweet us at Michigan Insider. Let's go to Mark in Southfield. Good morning, Mark.
Hi, guys.
How are you?
Hey, good. I have a comment that, number one, I don't think will ever happen. I don't even think it's being contemplated, but it's what I would love to see on the offense. I would like Jim Harbaugh to be his own offensive coordinator. I think that's rare for the head coach to take a to be his own coordinator. I do not think it's unprecedented. And like I said, I don't think it's really being contemplated, but I trust Jim more than anyone. I'd like to see him, manage his own offense. Of course, he'd have his assistants in place, call his own plays. I'd like to see him take control of this offense. I trust him more than anyone to fix it.
Thank you, Mark. Appreciate it. 734-998-1050. Email studio@wtk.com. Tweet us at Michigan Insider. I mean, he's heavily involved in the offensive play calling and game planning.
I mean, you're never going to have a system where you don't have someone with the name offensive coordinator. But functionally, he is, and I kind of agree with the caller that I think one of the problems with this offense is he tried to, step back and let other people do it, and they're not Jim Harbaugh. So they brought in Greg Frey, and they had, a period early in the season where they're trying to be an inside zone offense, which they sucked at, and then they eventually went away from that and went to more of a power Jim Harbaugh approach, and that worked much better. So, if honestly, I think whatever step back he took for whatever reason this year was a bad idea, because the other guys just weren't up to it.
Is Greg Frey gone? Is he going to Florida State? Is that
in all likelihood? Yes.
Okay. So you've got Smith gone, you've got Frey gone, you've got an extra coach. So Michigan will be hiring at least three coaches. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
734-998-1050. Email studio@wtk.com. Tweet us at Michigan Insider. So we were talking about the email I'd gotten from Jim about the defense. So Jim responded, and he said, 0-5 is the subject line. He goes, Brown couldn't shut down teams with winning records. They pile up stats against lesser teams and look good on paper. They can't stop better teams. They wear out by fourth quarter. Next year could be a nightmare. If the Michigan offensive brain trust can't turn around, it could be 6-6, just like Bo's worst year. Disclaimer. I have never claimed to be a prophet. However, I can't recall a defense that blitzed 80% or more ever wins championships.
There are many misconceptions in that post.
Would you care to go a little further?
I don't want to engage with him because
then we will move on. 734-998-1050. Do you have a comment, or Craig, do you have a response, or do you want to move on?
Generous that you read that on air, Ira.
Everyone's got opinions, and we let everybody have their voice.
That is really true.
I don't think Michigan blitzed 80% of the time this year, but I think to start with, that's probably not true. I think the defense was pretty damn good this year. I think if you look at it from a game-by-game basis or on any sort of advanced metrics, the defense was pretty good. I think they were 10th in most of the advanced metrics I saw or thereabouts. There's nothing there to discern. This was a very good defense. It'll probably be a good defense next year, too.
7-3. Yeah, I agree. Okay.
I'll throw in. I mean, I know the defense struggled against Penn State, but so did Washington's defense in that bowl game. And that was also another very good defense this year.
734-998-1050. Email studio@wtk.com. You can tweet us at Michigan Insider. Let's go down to Celine. Talk to Terry. I say go down to Celine like it's so far away. Hey, Terry, what's up?
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning.
And it bugs me. This narrative about, if you call for Harbaugh's head, you want to get rid of him, and then who would you get in his replacement? And to me, that kind of rings hollow, because you can still be critical of the guy. And you know what? And it's not beyond him to get up and leave this program before the job is done. You know what I mean? So I don't think that you have to have somebody in place, or who else would you have wanted? Because I was all on board when they got him. But as you've seen the season progress, and you've seen last season play out, to where, you know what, you have to question, because if you don't question, then, you know, you're walking blindly into who knows what. And, you know, and then there's also this other narrative out there, too, about, you know, too many cooks in the kitchen. Why wasn't this brought up last year? And I think that simply brought up with is that, you know what, once you start losing 4 or 5 games in a season, then you really have to take a hard look at everything. And when you see the offense, you know, doing the things that they've done and performing so badly, that's actually where it starts. People aren't questioning the defensive side of the ball, even though there are a few, but that's not where the problems lie. So, you know, I just think there's this, you know, just because you speak out against Harbaugh and his staff, that doesn't mean that, you know what, you're rooting against them. You just want better. And at some point, I mean, that better has to come, you know, because he has, I mean, he's a relatively young coach in the grand scheme of everything, you know, and, it's hopefully he can pull himself out of this, and you know that the program can start heading in the right direction. But I'm telling you what, man, next year, man, they got 5 games on their schedule. That I mean, they better pack their lunch and bring everything they got, man, because if not, it's going to be a long, long season, you know. So, but I guess maybe as I read the article today by Pat Caputo where, you know, he said put Jim in his submarine and pull this thing out of the doldrums, and hopefully that's exactly what he does. You know, is, you know, put his nose to the grindstone, put it on his iron jock, do all those, you know, cliches that he talks about, and really does it to himself, and have this thing ready to go come September 1st. Because if not, it's going to be a long, long season. So,
all right, Terry, appreciate the call. It's going to be a long off season. That I know.
Yes.
The first mistake Terry made, though, is that
terrible bowl game.
Terry, the first mistake you made is you read Pat Caputo, but that's really besides the point. I said this starting on Monday in the postgame show, and I've said this every day this week until today. So I haven't said it yet today, so I'll say it now today. Because there's been a lot of criticism on the show all week about whether it's about Jim's decisions of who he's hired or the play call. There's been a lot that's been going on because they went 8-5 and they lost a bowl game, and it wasn't very good. It was not a good performance. But anyone that thinks that Jim doesn't self-analyze all the time and is not – because you say he's got to, you know, work hard and do this. He does all those things, and there's going to be changes on the staff, meaning he knows that sometimes some of the staffing hires he's made were mistakes. Just like if you look back at Urban Meyer a few years ago, he hired it when he lost Herman. He hired one offensive coordinator. It didn't work, so we got rid of him and hired a different one because he knew he made a mistake. When he was at Florida, he had Mullen had a great offensive coordinator. They won. Then Mullen leaves to take a head coaching job. He hires Adazi as the OC, and guess what? It was a bad decision. Good coaches make bad hires, too. It happens. And then the best ones then make – well, Urban Meyer's case, that time he just quit coaching. But most of the time you push a guy out and bring in somebody new. A guy gets a job and you make changes. And I'm going to guess and guess very strongly that Jim is in the process and has been in the process of evaluating all those things. Do any of you guys think that he doesn't do those things?
No, absolutely. I mean, I think he does. When he was at Stanford, I feel like I was one of the last people to be truly excited that he was the coach at Stanford. I remember after year 3, still had some doubts. Andrew Luck had a terrible game against Cal. They looked awful on fourth quarter on some road games that year. And even in his last year, his fourth year at Stanford, when they won that Orange Bowl over Virginia Tech, you know, they got beat by Oregon pretty bad. I think Jim Harbaugh has proved himself to be a pretty good coach since then. And, you know, I think everyone has the right to be critical this week. But I think looking forward long term, you got to feel you got to be confident about it.
734-998-1050, email studio at WTK.com. You can tweet us at Michigan Insider. I think by the time I've gotten to this point now, we're at, 9:36 on Thursday of the week of the bowl game. And I think I've heard it all, but then we'll keep getting new ones. And I'll keep thinking if I've heard it all, we'll keep getting new ones. And
I'm just a cook.
And, yeah.
I'm lonely.
And
lonely
cook. That's Mrs. enjoying his being Steven Seagal on the other side of the glass over and over and over again. So it's I mean, at this point in time, someone asked me what's next. That was the question I got the other day. What's next? And my answer was a really simple one. What's next? A lot of hard work. And it's not like Jim is averse to hard work or his teams are averse to hard work. It's they had a bad year. It was what we hope is a down year. And if it's a down year, then it's a blip on the radar. But you look at the where Nick Saban was in his third year at LSU when they were barely above 500. And you can go down the list of a lot of coaches. Most coaches don't step into what Urban Meyer stepped into at Ohio State. And year three, for a lot of these coaches, was a dip. And then what happens in years four, five, six, they start winning bigger and bigger, and they have a lot of wins. And before you throw the baby out with the bathwater, to use one of those cliches, you figure out what was wrong. They work on figuring out what's wrong, and then you make fixes. And that's why we're having conversations about Dan Enos and Greg Roman and Al Washington and Kurt Anderson and other guys that may be involved in coming in and being the next offensive coaches, because there's going to be changes. You're going to have a new safeties coach anyway. We know that. There's going to be a 10th assistant, so you have a new coach there. And there's a good chance Greg Fry leaves. There's a good chance that Drev and Pep are gone, which means that's five new coaches that are going to be on the staff next year. Things will look different, especially on offense, when you have different players in place. And I've heard of so many calls from people saying they need to do this, they need to do that. Well, you have to let them get through the week first, like while they're in the process of doing those things. Because I don't have people on Twitter like, are these guys fired yet? Are they still around? The process is like still going on. I know from someone that goes to school with the Drev, that apparently the kids weren't even back from Florida yet. So maybe they're still away, you know, like families and whatever. Things are – they get a moment. But Jim's working. I'm pretty confident Jim's working on whatever the next steps are. Yeah. The next step is a lot of hard work from Jim and everybody else.
Well, I think every year is a lot of hard work for Jim. I mean,
right.
It's like
– it was a bad year. It was a disappointing year. It was a frustrating year.
Well,
and it's manifesting itself on the radio this week for sure.
Well, the unfortunate thing is, you know, bowl performances have an oversized weight in the entire offseason, whether that's good or bad. And Michigan had a bad bowl game, and so it's going to be a long 8 months.
Yeah, we did say that we were joking about it. Mike Spath and I were joking about it, about what we want to see in the bowl game, and we were joking how we want a bowl win so that this week would have been easier. And now we know exactly what would happen in the other way.
I'm a little worried about Spath, man, after his Twitter feed this week. Got to talk to him. I'm going to make sure that guy's all right.
No, he's fine. He'll be okay. And you'll hear him on the air in 21 minutes. Well, a few minutes after that. 21 minutes to the top of the hour, and then he'll come on shortly after that for Inside the Huddle. Phone lines are open, 734-998-1050. You can email studiowtk.com. You can tweet us at Michigan Insider. The week for Michigan Athletics started off fairly discouraging when it came to football. It was not a whole lot more encouraging when it came to hockey, but it was a pretty encouraging restart to Big Ten play. So we'll talk basketball. We're going to make Brian's dreams come true. We're going to talk basketball on the other side of the break here on Sports Talk 1050 WTK. Welcome back inside the MDN studio. Sports Talk 1050 WTK. The ticket online at WTK.com. So Michigan resumed Big Ten play. Big Ten play restarted this week after the early slate of a couple of games about a month ago. Before we get to Michigan itself, the team they played the other day, did you see what Iowa this week? They play Tuesday, Thursday, Sunday. I think is what it is, or Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, this condensed schedule. And every team's going to have one of those, like, three games in 5 or 6 days stretch, at least one or two of them. But I know I guess it helps prepare you for March when you play every other day two games in 3 days. But still, man.
Well, and you're also going to have, like, 10 days off between the end of the Big Ten tournament and your first tournament game. And I think that's going to help them.
I don't know. I don't know. I'm not sure that gap – because some conferences will have that gap, and most of the conferences that have that gap are to the point, you know, are so lesser down, you know, the mid-major and low-major, they're going to lose their first-round games anyway. They're, you know, 14, 15, 16 seeds. But I'm not a fan of the gap. I think you can lose some of the momentum. If you – like last year, Michigan goes in the Big Ten tournament run, and they win their next two games. If they had a week off, maybe they lose some of that momentum. I don't know. We don't have an answer to this question until we see it play itself out and how it impacts the Big Ten. Of course, the Big Ten only has a few teams that will actually impact, because the Big Ten has got a couple of teams in the top, but it's not that good of a league this year per se. And as Maryland loses players to injuries like their quarterbacks on their football team, that's going to drop them down a little bit more. And McIntosh is sitting out now for a little bit for Northwestern, who's not gotten off to a good start to their season. So the Big Ten is Michigan State, it's Purdue, I guess Minnesota, and
no, not Minnesota.
And Michigan's right there. Michigan could be right there. I'm really intrigued.
Team in the league,
yeah, and I think so. And I'm really intrigued by this team to get to Michigan. I
I know they had losses in December, but losses in December happen to John Beilein's teams, and I want to see how they learn from them. So you get to the Iowa game, and they, you know, Iowa's got that deficit at, you know, 10, 12 points. And then you say, all right, is this second half going to be like Texas, or is the second half going to be like Ohio State? And you see how that, you know, how are they going to play that second half and hold a lead? And I know Iowa's not a very good team, although, man, Cook is a beast. Yeah, he was beasted good in that game. But Michigan learned, it seems like, at least a little bit from the LSU and the Ohio State games to be able to put teams away in that fourth quarter, in the final minutes of the in the game. Now they did miss a couple of free throws, but that was a solid win on the road because it's, while not against a great team, it's against a team that they hadn't won in that venue since 2011, the team they hadn't beaten since 2014. Somehow Iowa just has Michigan's number. It was a nice way to restart Big Ten play a couple days ago.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm also fascinated by this Michigan team. I just ran some of my numbers, and I do efficiency by points per possession adjusted for strength of schedule, and they're 47th on offense, which is very low for a John Beilein team. They're 29th on defense, which is very good for, I mean, their defense is ranking better than their offense right now. And a lot of that is it's just a weird thing being a Michigan fan and seeing that. And the Iowa game was great. I mean, to see them hit those shots in the first half. And I thought that little stretch in the first half where they were hitting their threes and they were getting a bunch of steals, that's kind of the new Michigan team. And that's them at their best.
Yeah, it's Craig, you've watched a lot of Michigan over the years. You've watched, yep. And the nature of college sports, the turnover of teams and players, that you obviously you have new faces every year. But this year in particular just seems so different because Derek and Zach played so many minutes, took so many big shots, and there are times where, especially with Mo still nursing that injury, where you have Teske and Livers and Xavier Simpson and Matthews on the floor with Rockman. It's such a different team, and I'm so intrigued by it. What are your thoughts, Craig?
Well, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned that constellation because that's an incredibly good defensive team. The thing that's bothersome to me is the Mo Duncan Robinson connection, because that's our worst defensive team. And then you're starting Brooks too, who's not terrible on defense by any stretch of the imagination, but he's not as good as X, or the player formerly known as X. And you've got Teske really does a lot for this team, as does Simpson on defense, and Matthews is, of course, a very good defensive player. I think it was Brian or someone pointed out that on the couple, we had a terrible time with Cook, but on the couple of sequences where Matthews ended up on Cook, he did a pretty good job. So I don't know. To me, this is a really, really interesting team. I'm not sure that Duncan right now is minutes shouldn't be declining a bit, because he's, you know, his offense has been, you know, he obviously can shoot the ball, although he's only shooting 4 of 22 in Big Ten games. But I don't think when you pair him with Wagner, I think you've got a much weaker defensive team, and it's hard to rationalize. I think you're better off with Livers with Wagner, and if you're going to, when you use Duncan, you probably should use him more with Teske. But right now, I think Ed said his numbers are 28 or 29 on defense. I think KenPom has us at 21. On defense. So, yeah, this is a surprisingly good defensive team. One other brief thought is that we, so far this year, we're number 12 in the country in defensive rebounding, which is just, you know, startling for a Beilein team, because generally we've given up some in that arena to make sure we take care of the ball and turn the other team over. And we're still doing that. We're still very high. I think we're number 12 in turnovers, and we're good on turning the other team over. But the really big thing this year has been the change in the defensive boards. And I don't know how sustainable that is, but I think we may see some of that this weekend, because Illinois, while not a good team, is one of the better offensive rebounding teams in the country, or has been so far. I think they're number 6 in offensive rebounding. So that'll be the interesting matchup this weekend, to see if Michigan can keep Illinois off the offensive boards. If we can, then I'd say, you know, that there's really something going on here. I'm still not sure this is a great shooting team. They shot it well, particularly in the first half against Iowa, but I think that it's a very intriguing team and a team with all kinds of potentials that we haven't seen in the past. That's my take.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a different kind of Beeline team. Yeah, I agree with Craig that it's probably time to return Duncan Robinson to his kind of microwave role he's had most of his career here. You know, go with Livers, maybe a little bit of Matthews at the four, play Duncan when the opposition brings in its number seven and eight guys. And one of those guys should be someone that Duncan can check. You know, handcuff Duncan a little bit to Teske just so that if he does get a blow by, there's a better defender on the interior there. And, you know, just I think it's clear that Robinson and Wagner is not a good combination to have out on the court at the same time. So, I think we're seeing Michigan move towards that. You know, Livers had 27 minutes in the Iowa game, and Robinson couldn't get back on the court because, I mean, when he was out there, they were going right at him. And that's
plus Livers played really well. He shot the ball well, and he was effective on the defensive side. I mean, he was Livers like, can five start, or six from the floor overall, three from three.
Some threes, yeah. I mean, he was at like 20% from three before this game. So, but he's the stroke looks good. He's been able to can him in high school. I think that'll come.
Of course, stroke looking good doesn't actually matter, Z, and he's shooting at what 40-something% right now.
Well, so. I mean, that it matters for him because like he's never going to be a guy who can actually pull up from three. But you know, his development in that department does change the offense because you can't just kind of sag off him a la Tum Tum, and just
right. He is not a true self check. Plus, I have been really impressed. Just to add to the Z comment real quick, I've been really impressed. Not only the fact that he's improved his shooting ability, but when he gets around the rim, I know he's been dealing with this for a long time because he's always been one of the shorter guys, I'm sure, on the floor when he plays. He's super crafty around the rim, and he's getting better at finishing than he was struggling with. His limited minutes last year, he struggled with it. And early in this season, it seemed like he struggled with it. But he finds a way, because his arms are long, to get the ball away from the body and flip it around guys and over guys. And he's crafty, he's creative, and he finds a way to score at the hole. And he also obviously is making those shots. And he's got those long arms of defense. He's turning into a fun player to watch. He may not. Does it matter? Do you think it matters if he starts or not? I think maybe.
Yeah, I think.
I think starting would help the. Because they had that slow start. They only had 3 points for the first, like, 3 minutes of the game the other day.
Well, I mean, with Simpson, he's never going to be a guy who's, like, a high usage player. But you know, there's a difference between him being, like, a 12% usage player and a 19% usage player. In the first four games Michigan had against KenPom top 100 opponents, he had 5 points. 5 assists and 6 turnovers.
Right, and that's not an average. That was total.
That's total. Right? Yeah. In the last four games against KenPom, top 100 opponents, 45 points, 12 assists, 4 turnovers, 7 steals, and just 4 fouls.
Right. He had no turnovers against Iowa. So
yeah. So that he's coming into his own, and you know the ability to hit to can an open three allows him to attack closeouts because people actually have to close him out. And then with an unbalanced defense, he becomes an actual point guard. So that development has really helped him out. He's getting a little bit more assertive. But, yeah, he's never going to be Derek Walton. But
right. I made a comparison. I brought this analogy up in the past, and I'm not comparing players. And Sam and I like to make sure we say that we're not comparing the players. But I remember when Bobby Hurley was a freshman at Duke. This is taking us back a little bit. But I remember they came into D.C. to play Georgetown. And he was a self-check. I mean, he could not hit the backside of a barn from long range. They had McCaffrey as the other guard, and who eventually transferred to Vanderbilt, but he was the shooter. And Hurley could not shoot at all. And the next year, though, he started to make shots. It's not that he was a great three-point shooter, but he kept you honest, and you had to guard him at the top of the key, outside, because he was going to put the shot up, and he had a decent shot of making it if you left him open. And again, I'm not saying that Z is Bobby Hurley, and Hurley turned into a lottery pick, et cetera, but it's that ability to develop your jump shot from freshman year to sophomore year to take away space in the lane or to create more space in the lane for your other guys because they're not being sagged off of. I'm going to keep saying this over and over as the season goes, because there will be bumps in the road. It's not like they're going to now win every game and they're not going to have any struggles along the way. There will be struggles and there will be bumps in the road, but they are an intriguing team because of the development of these guys. Putting Livers taking those minutes from Robinson, and the ability to have a Teske come off the bench and play who did he play, like 26, I think it was, minutes in the, or 24 minutes in the game the other day, and he had, you know, 6 points, seven rebounds, and he didn't have any blocks, but he definitely altered some shots. He's a physical presence inside. It's a it's a different big for John Beilein's disposal.
Well, and I like his development, too, because he really didn't deserve to be on the court last year, and you've seen a lot of improvement.
And he's outperforming the guy who transferred down to Clemson at last check.
So. Yeah. Everybody who Michigan fields is outperforming Mark Dinal as a defensive rebounder.
All right, I'm not going to.
He's at 6.3% at Clemson. Yeah. Simpson is at 11%.
And that's lower than it was here, wasn't it?
Well, a little bit.
Yeah,
not much, though.
No, I know, but
we're talking about the rebounding, but the one of the major things in the rebounding is the fact that Wagner went and tested his NBA stock, mm-hmm. figured out that he couldn't just be an offensive player, and now he's ripping down 27% of defensive rebounds. That's a huge change from last year. Yeah. And then the backup center is an asset instead of one of the biggest liabilities in the country in that department.
Right, because you knew you were going to have to pick up, although you got to give credit to the guys on the wings like Rock and Matthews in particular, because you're going to lose Walton's Walton's a great guard for rebounding.
It's a team effort, but the center position, I think, is the major reason.
Absolutely.
That
it had,
up.
Center had to get better at rebounding from where it had been when your guard, although I do love when your guard can get the rebound because it does allow the break to push a little quicker. Well, but those guys are pretty good at getting the ball to the hands of, there are generally three guys or four guys on the floor that can push the ball up, in particular three, and yep. they're pretty good at getting the ball in those guys' hands. Like one guy that we see a little bit here and there, we see he played what five minutes in the first half and one in the second half, only hit a three, was Jordan Poole. The guy obviously can shoot. Is it just that he's behind Matthews and Rock more than anything else with the minutes right now?
Well, he gets
and
on the
still,
court.
Defense is still work in progress.
That's why. It's because like he gets back cut and. Nothing will get you on the bench more as a freshman if you get back cut. And it's happening on a regular basis, and he's suffering some blow-bys that are unusual for the rest of the team now, which is a nice change. So he's got to just kind of settle down, and he kind of reminds me of Quinn Hughes on the hockey team where he's like obviously a really talented guy, but the transition to a higher level of competition is kind of leaving him exposed in certain ways.
Well, then it's a benefit to him that he can play the select minutes here and there and continue to develop his game in practice and to be behind those two guys who are both pretty good role models for him to follow, to be behind, because that's where the minutes are.
He'll
at the
get
two
there,
and the three.
But, you know, he gets on the court and, you know, he does a couple things and I'm like, why doesn't this guy play more? And then he does a couple more things. I'm like, oh,
got it.
That's
why. Yeah, the yin and the yang.
I'm excited about Poole for next year.
Yeah, really I like the prospects. I like his future. I like this team. I don't know if they're going to be as good at the end of the season as last year's team was at the end of the season, but they're better in the first week of January than the team was last year in the first week of January.
I mean, this is when the other team really started to take off. This was
it was February. The beginning of February was dreadful for this team last year.
Right.
They lost to Michigan State on the road. They lost to Michigan State in early February. They lost at home to Ohio State, and that was the low point.
No. The Illinois game was the low point.
Yes.
The
low point is what sparks you to your high point.
Right, and then Maverick Morton called him soft afterwards.
But that was earlier in the season.
Yeah, well, you know, that happened. No,
and the game of Michigan against Michigan State up there was not a good game. The game against Ohio State here was the low point of the season last year.
No, but the game at Michigan State was the weird game where I felt like they played horribly and only lost –
right,
like
wasn't
six
they didn't get blown out, but they lost. And the next game was the home game against Ohio State. That was the low point of the year. And I say that because, well, after the Illinois game, people were like, but they had not gotten a higher level yet.
They had
gotten to a higher level, and that drop off against Ohio State got everyone scared. But it also, for some reason, losing to Ohio State seems to be a trigger for this team because it worked earlier this year, too, because they played better after that loss, and they seem to be playing better. Hopefully, they'll take another loss to Ohio State to trigger another jump.
And I like our chances to make the tournament just because the rest of the league is not very good.
No, and what you have to do as fans, we need to cheer for UCLA, which is easier without a ball brother on the team. We need to cheer for Texas. We need to cheer for LSU. I mean, right? You have to cheer teams that you win and lose to, but you need to cheer for teams. You want those non-conference teams to be really good by the end of the year, as good as they possibly can be, to bump up those numbers to offset the fact that how many top 100 or top 50 RPI games are left on the schedule.
Yeah.
You know, I have a note about Texas. I'm glad that came up. I mean, people don't appreciate, I think, quite yet how good a win that was.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Texas went into Iowa State the other night and won, and Iowa State's a top 35 team, and they've got losses on neutral courts and overtime to Duke and Gonzaga. They beat Butler, who's really good. Kansas, they did lose to 6 by Kansas, but Mo Bamba put up, 22, 15, and 8 blocks in that game against Kansas. Texas is a really, really good defensive team, one of the best 4 or 5 defensive teams in the country. That's a good win. And the UCLA win obviously is good too. So I think we're in good shape on the NCAA tournament. Heck, even Central Michigan is 12-1 outside of their loss to Michigan. And I think VCU by the end of the season will be a top 100 team. They're, I think, about 95 now. So yeah, those teams we should be rooting for, and I think Michigan's in very good shape vis-a-vis the NCAA tournament. The question now, I think, is seeding.
And as we wrap up, just a quick basketball note for the basketball fans that are out there: watch Trae Young, go watch him play. He is phenomenal, and his next 3 games are all against top highly ranked teams. He is absolutely phenomenal. He is the Steph Curry part Duke. He's the next one coming. Thanks to Brian for coming in. Thanks to Ed for coming in. Thanks to Craig for calling in.
Better than us! No!